For a seventh night, demonstrations have taken place in cities across the United States. The unrest was sparked by the death in Minneapolis of an African-American man, George Floyd. Mr. Floyd, who was unarmed, was killed when a white police officer kneeled on his neck. Last night, tear gas was fired on protesters outside the White House. In an address, the US President Donald Trump threatened to deploy the military to quell the disorder.
Today, I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets. Mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled. If a city or state refuses to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents, then I will deploy the United States military and quickly solve the problem for them. I am also taking swift and decisive action to protect our great capital, Washington, D.C. What happened in this city last night was a total disgrace. As we speak, I am dispatching thousands and thousands of heavily armed soldiers, military personnel, and law enforcement officers to stop the rioting, looting, vandalism, assaults, and the wanton destruction of property.
A vigil has been continuing overnight at the spot where George Floyd was killed. Elsewhere, however, demonstrations gave way to violence and chaos. There was looting in Manhattan, an SUV was driven into a line of police officers in Buffalo, and four police officers were shot and injured in St. Louis, Missouri. Within the past few minutes, there have been reports from Las Vegas of a U.S. Marshal being shot and killed. Earlier, Terrence Floyd, George Floyd's brother, visited the scene of his death and appealed for an end to the violence.
If I'm not over here blowing up stuff, if I'm not over here messing up my community, then what are y'all doing? What are y'all doing? Y'all doing nothing, because that's not going to bring my brother back at all. It may feel good for the moment, just like when you drink. But when it come down, you're gonna wonder what you did.
That's right.
Let's do this another way. Let's stop thinking that our voice don't matter.
That's right.
And vote.
There you go.
Vote. Not just vote for the president, vote for the preliminaries, vote for everybody.
That's right.
Educate yourself. Educate yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to tell you who's who. Educate yourself and know who you're voting for. And that's how we're going to hit them.
Terrence Floyd. In Dublin yesterday, demonstrators marched from the GPO on O'Connell Street to the US Embassy. They chanted Black Lives Matter and called for justice. Some of those taking part spoke to RTE News.
All lives do matter, but black lives in America seem to be taken for granted. And it's been a couple of years where you've seen police killing black lives, and it doesn't seem to matter.
We just want our voice to be heard, you know.
I don't even want anything special. I just want our lives to mean the same as yours.
Here today in support of our brothers and sisters all over the world, in America especially. We're looking for justice for the inequality that happens in America.
You have to take action instead of just complaining about it. You just have to come and like make a stand or some way about it.
Some of those marching in Dublin City Centre yesterday. Joining us now is James Lance Taylor, who's Professor of Politics at the University of San Francisco. Thanks indeed for talking to us this morning. George Floyd was far from the first African-American man to be killed by the police in controversial circumstances, and we know as well that there have been protests before. But is this different?
First of all, thank you, Rachel, for having me back on. And I would say, real quickly, it's different because the face of it is different. The fact that you have a strong and deep diversity, led mainly by, in some places, in some cities, like a city like Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, you have a larger white population and a very small black population, so it's not surprising that the outburst at ground zero in this particular instance of Mr. George would be largely represented by a mostly white American population. And in other places with larger African-American populations, you would expect more of a African-American group, like in Atlanta, Georgia. But what you've seen across the board is almost as even sort of breakdown of young people from almost every major demographic group in America. And I think one of the things that people are trying to do is dismiss this by trying to pretend that everyone here is an outsider. Now, at some point, everyone can't be from nowhere. The main takeaway is that all of these people are outside agitators, and then they're the legitimate protesters and the illegitimate protesters. This is all nonsense. Americans did this to Martin Luther King. The reason why he wrote the letter to Birmingham Jail in 1963 was because he was called an outside agitator from Memphis. I mean, from Selma, and he had no business in Birmingham. So they use these very tactics against King to say he was an outsider. These people are from somewhere in America. That much we do know. At least we think they're from America. So everyone says, well, they're not from Texas, they're not from New York, they're not from Georgia, they're not from Alabama. These are all outside agitators. Well, they have to be American at the very least. So they are part of the problem and a symptom of the larger problem that is, I think, has more to do with political economy. And race is always a issue in America, but it becomes more or less salient in more difficult times, like under the stress of the current economic downturn and the way in which Corona has affected African Americans in particular. But, you know, sort of racial reality of you know, being a minority population, you know, as the people of Ireland can understand, is an everyday reality for being black in America. So what has made it worse is that the president of the United States has joined himself to it. And so for that reason, I think we are in a different territory because the president is actually agitating the polarization bluntly and forthrightly and proudly and demonstratively, and no president in American history, even the slaveholders, even the segregationists, even the well-known racists like Andrew Jackson or Lyndon Johnson, none of them acted with the total combination of all of those negative traits at once. And Mr. Trump is functioning very negatively in a very dangerous environment, because he has no control over what happens if some person takes his, you know, references to the Second Amendment to a level where there ends up being some sort of mass violence in this country, as most people know is a common thing. I mean, this would really bring us to the brink of what everyone has been saying for 30 years and dismissing for 30 years as race war. And I never took it seriously. But where we are is the president from above is agitating race. It normally comes from marginalized groups from below. But Mr. Trump has brought them to the mainstream, and it's become a very dangerous situation in this country, and I think it's going to backfire on him in the most devastating way that anyone's ever seen in about 5 months.
I was reading comments from his supporters on Twitter this morning to see what they were saying, and they believed that he said exactly what they wanted him to say last night, that he expressed sympathy for the Floyd family, but he then spoke about law and order, and that's where the stress was. Was it realistic to expect him to say anything different?
No, and I think at this point, Americans continue to, on one part, think Donald Trump is still just joking around and performing. And on the other hand, you know, I don't think many people, you know, take him seriously when he starts talking about, you know, being a law and order president, because he was in a bunker hiding last night. And he came out this morning trying to recover from that humiliation by trying to act extra machismo, extra, you know, you know, like he was, you know, some great, you know, great leader who was authorizing the clamping down on everyday people. The problem is you have stupid everyday people at everyday levels who will take this literally, and police officers. Many of these officers who have acted out in violence since the killing of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California, on December 31st, 2008. That is the beginning of the modern anti-police brutality movement amongst African Americans that everyone keeps making a mistake and calling the Black Lives Matter movement. Let me be quick. In Oakland, California, the Black Lives Matter movement grew out of the Oscar Grant movement. The Oscar Grant movement was because of the young man, Oscar Grant, who was killed on a subway station here in the Bay Area. And it was a popular film called Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan as the actor, made by Ryan Coogler, who's from Oakland. And so this whole sort of reality of Oscar Grant's death is in 2009 really was the breach of a kind of peace between national law enforcement and African Americans as a group since Rodney King in 1992. Right. So what I'm saying was there were a few incidents high profile here and there in New York, but generally speaking, after the Rodney King riots in 1992, Los Angeles, police had reformed themselves and moved away from the warrior, the war on drugs warrior cop to the reformed guardian cop in the post-Rodney King riots era. And that was the established regime of policing in America until 2008 when Oscar Grant is killed. And then when Oscar Grant is killed and the movement begins in 2009, that's where Colin Kaepernick comes out of. Colin Kaepernick comes out of the Oakland-based Oscar Grant movement. The hashtag Black Lives Matter was launched by two women that belong to the Oscar Grant movement in Oakland, California. And it also explains why the Occupy movement that started in New York also ended in Oakland, California. We had a federal officer killed here last night in Oakland, down about 5 miles from where I am right now. So, Trump, I think his base is misreading the reality that Americans are deeply disturbed, and they ought to be deeply disturbed about what they're seeing too. If this was Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, everybody who seems to be making these excuses for Donald Trump's language and rhetoric and behavior. I mean, we have law enforcement officers of the United States of America in 50 cities beating up American people. That should be violently repugnant to everybody in this country. Everybody should be up in arms. People should be surrounding the White House right now in the millions. But they are not because of what they're seeing. But it should offend every sensibility that Americans have, because the one thing Americans embrace is their sense of freedom and the freedom to express themselves. And to have the president disgracefully remove people with tear gas today so he could do a stunt in front of the church with a Bible in Washington, D.C., which is going to be the picture that destroys and ends his presidency, I'm predicting. I think Donald Trump ended his presidency disgracefully today, and he cannot recover from it electorally because of the ways in which it will remind people of, like, the Michael Dukakis photo when Dukakis got famously in a tank. And it was just a low moment for him. And Bush, the son, had it when he said, it's a done deal that, the mission accomplished. When Bush said mission accomplished, that was a horrible graphic for him. And I think this is going to be a backfire on Donald Trump. The African-American vote is at the front of it. The African-American vote, since Donald Trump lost by 300,000 votes, 3 million votes the night he became president, African Americans led the march that gave Nancy Pelosi back the gavel and that gave the Democrats plus 8 million votes. So since Donald Trump has won, he's lost in terms of voting since by 11 million votes, and African Americans have been at the forefront of it because they're trying to save democracy in America. Most whites seem to be inclined and willing to allow this thing to go to an apartheid-type situation like you had in South Africa that began in the 40s and gave us Mandela. And Trump can be that figure if the country allows him to continue to play this game and tilt that way. So blacks are on the forefront of it, both in terms of elections, but also in terms of this rebellion you see. Blacks are on the forefront of every front opposing Donald Trump, both legitimately in terms of elections and illegitimately in terms of the street protests. African Americans are leading the way against Trump because they're even using Biden. Okay,
James, listen, I hate to cut across you, and it's been fascinating to get your perspective. Unfortunately, we're right up against the time, and we're going to have to leave it at that. But thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning from San Francisco. That was James Lance Taylor, who's Professor of Politics at the University of San Francisco. It's